Very shortly, we'll be hard-pressed to find a brand that doesn't make sustainability or climate action part of their core value proposition to customers.
Hey everyone, welcome back. I'm your host, Anu Dugal, and this is The 2%, a podcast highlighting women who are breaking barriers and building the businesses of the future. In today's episode, I chat with serial entrepreneur Julia Collins, founder and CEO of Planet Forward, the startup tackling climate change through the power of our food system. Julia and I discuss how her background in the food and tech world inspired her to innovate at the intersection of these industries, the pandemic's impact on the future of sustainability, and the trends and opportunities she is most excited about in this space. Julia shares advice for brands, investors, and individuals looking to reduce and understand their carbon footprint, and also provides tips for founders around fundraising, building a diverse cap table, and creating a leadership community. Let's get started.
Hi, Julia. It's great to have you on here today. Where are we finding you?
I'm here at home in San Francisco, working from home as I have been for quite a while now.
Amazing. And apparently, you know, very, very close to your delivery date as well, which is so exciting.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, number two is on the way and I'm feeling really, really great and excited.
Fantastic. So I'd love to maybe just kick it off and have you share a little bit about your background, in particular, you know, kind of both the food world, the tech world, and really, you know, what inspired you to innovate at the intersection of these two industries?
Sure. So, you know, my connection to food really comes from my grandparents who migrated from the Deep South to the San Francisco Bay Area during the Great Migration, which, as you probably know, is this time when millions and millions of Black people from the South moved to the North, mostly to take advantage of new economic opportunities. But my grandparents were actually trained in dentistry, and so they moved to the Bay Area to serve this growing community of Black people during the time of segregation, when if you were a person of color, you couldn't just go to any dentist. And so there was really this idea that all people were equal and all people were equally worth serving. That was the like kind of governing idea in the Collins household, and it was something that really was the drumbeat or the through line through all of our interactions. And I think when you grow up believing that all people are equal and all people are equally worth serving, food is a really logical extension to the way that that happens in the world. So I just, you know, from the time that I was a little girl, really found connection with people through food. You know, it was the time when I felt most tuned in, when I felt most at the center of good conversations, often when I felt the most safe, was when I was sharing food with other people. So I've always, always, always wanted to work in the world of food. And then later in my career, I began to understand all of the incredible innovation that could happen when you merged food with technology. And so that's why for the past decade, I've been building businesses at the intersection of food and technology.
And in terms of your background, you know, immediately prior to Planet Forward, where were you and kind of what was the journey that led you to this new venture?
Yeah, so after business school, I was living and working in New York City, building restaurants, opening restaurants across New York, different kinds, cheese restaurants and jazz restaurants and Afro-Asian fusion restaurants. And then at a certain point in 2015, I began to wonder how I could solve some of the issues that I saw with the traditional brick and mortar restaurant model. Things like rising occupancy and rent rates, making it hard to make a profitable business, lots of inequity in the way that workers were compensated between what we call the front and the back of the house, lack of benefits, lack of fair wages. So I wanted to understand how to actually create a new paradigm for the way that we make and deliver food to customers. And that's why in 2015, I moved actually back to the Bay Area, which is my hometown, my home area, back to San Francisco, my hometown, to co-found a company called Zoom Pizza that was all about changing the way that food is made and delivered.
And I understand that company went on to do incredibly well.
Yeah, I think every company has a journey and it's never all up and to the right. It's never a straight line. It's usually a winding road and a circuitous path. But we had some really incredible innovations that came out of Zoom Pizza in the early days and certainly had tremendous amount of good fortune in terms of fundraising and being able to grow that company to a unicorn valuation. For me, you know, I became a mom for the first time in 2017. And as somebody who feels so deeply connected to food and the power of food to make the world a better place, I again began to wonder, what's next? You know, what could I do next? And when I learned that 34% of man-made greenhouse gas emissions were coming from land use and food systems, it became very clear to me, anew, that my role in the ecosystem was to use food tech to catalyze climate action. I became laser focused on trying to build a business that would help tackle climate change through food. And so that's why in 2019, I founded my current company, which is called Planet Forward.
For those who are listening in that are not familiar, what is Planet Forward and how does it work?
Yeah, so at Planet Forward, we're on a mission to tackle climate change by making it easier to bring climate-friendly products to market. We believe that all consumers and all brands have a role to play. And what we really want to do is make it easy for consumers and brands to make decisions that are going to cause them to be lower emissions and more climate friendly. So our technology helps brands understand their carbon footprint, reduce that carbon footprint, and then get on a path to being carbon neutral. We also help brands improve the overall sustainability of their products by connecting them to a universe of sustainable ingredients. So we really are a one-stop shop for brands who want to be climate friendly, who are working to be carbon neutral, and who at the end of the day want to make sure that they're delivering truly sustainable and even regenerative products into the universe. Fundamentally, the vision of the company is to usher in the next wave of sustainable products. And I truly believe that we can build a near future where every single thing that we consume is part of the solution instead of being part of the problem.
So exciting. And I know, you know, climate is obviously very kind of upfront and center and so incredibly timely as well. Congratulations on the new venture.
Thanks so much.
So I can imagine that, you know, as you were ideating on Planet Forward and you know, thinking about the business model, finding a way to bring climate-friendly products to market is not easy. Where did you really see the unique opportunity to disrupt the industry? You had, you know, obviously knowledge of within the food world, the tech world. How did you see, you know, a space that you specifically felt like there was, you know, an opportunity for you to tackle?
Yeah, I would say I'm much more interested in being a catalyst than a disruptor. And the opportunity that I saw with Planet Forward was to really catalyze climate action for consumers and brands. When I learned that 34% of man-made emissions were coming from land use and food systems, I was really surprised. I had always thought about manufacturing and transportation and energy as the sectors that we had to focus on. And of course we have to focus on those. There's no silver bullet solution. But with more than a third of the impact coming just from land use and food, I realized there was an opportunity there to really catalyze climate action. Because I would actually tell you that most people don't realize that their choice of what to eat or what to wear or how to style their hair, all of these consumable goods and food, fashion, and beauty, most people don't understand that their choice of what they consume is directly related to climate change. Sure. So I really saw an opportunity with Planet Forward to catalyze climate action by making it very, very easy for brands to understand their carbon footprint. From a tech perspective, the big advantage that we had was an acquisition that I made earlier this year, acquiring the largest LCA database. And when I say LCA database, I'm talking about life cycle analysis, which is the science that you use to measure the carbon footprint of any product. So through that acquisition, Planet Forward now has the largest life cycle analysis database covering agriculture in North America. And the benefit that that provides to our customers is it allows them to understand their carbon footprint in, you know, hours instead of months. So really making the process so much easier and so much faster than brand for brands.
I'm curious, you launched the business or the early stages of the business during, you know, a unique time, COVID. How do you think forced isolation or the lockdown really kind of forced a prioritization of sustainability tech as a category? And have you seen any evolution in terms of interest, either from customers or investors, or just generally the macro environment?
Yeah, I would say that sustainability tech and climate tech are incredibly investable categories for funds right now. I'm seeing so much more activity and interest in teams and solutions that are squarely focused on improving sustainability, or at Planet Forward, like we are laser focused on tackling climate change. And it's really exciting to see funds coming to market who are explicitly focused on climate tech and sustainability tech. It's also exciting to see funds who have already been in market beginning to build out their sustainability tech and climate tech theses. I see both happening at the same time, and it's tremendously exciting. So I think for founders that are interested in building, you know, climate solutions or sustainability solutions, now really is your time. Please, please, we need you. We need every single person who is passionate about this and who has the capability to build in this area to be working, because there is no silver bullet solution. It's going to take a lot of different innovations to get the job done. On the consumer side of things, what I'll tell you, I should mention that the first product that we built at Planet Forward was not our software. Actually, the first product that we built was our own brand. We built a brand called Moonshot, this incredible brand called Moonshot, a snack brand. And we launched it with a line of climate-friendly crackers in December of last year. So still a really, really new brand that's coming to market and popping up in retailers all over the country. And the reason why we created Moonshot is we actually wanted to understand what it took to create a totally climate-friendly product, you know, something that was carbon neutral. Yeah, something that was sourced from regenerative farmers. And by understanding really deeply the needs and the pains of carbon neutral and sustainable brands, we were then able on the software side of the business to build a set of features that really met those needs and pains. So what I've learned from Moonshot and having a consumer brand in market is that consumers absolutely, to your point about sort of this increased interest in our food systems as a result of being in shelter in place during the pandemic, you're absolutely right. Consumers are increasingly interested in understanding where their food comes from. And they're not just concerned about it for their own bodies, they're concerned about it for their own bodies and the planet. So we're seeing a much more robust consumer market around sustainable products. And I think this is a trend that's been ongoing. 55% of the growth in CPG for the last 5 years has come from sustainably marketed products. So this is a trend that we expect to continue into the future. And I'm really glad about that.
Oh, fantastic. That's so great and inspiring to hear as well. I think to that point, how do you feel long-term this period of kind of extreme change, you know, across a variety of different aspects of our lives, you know, whether it's work from home, whether it's healthcare, how do you think that this period will, you know, long-term impact the future of sustainability, particularly as it relates to, you know, we've seen an acceleration of adoption of e-commerce, for example. So any thoughts on what the world of sustainability or how it will be shaped by the pandemic?
There are a few things that I see. The first is that very shortly, we'll be hard-pressed to find a brand that doesn't make sustainability or climate action part of their core value proposition to customers. Mm-hmm. When I talk to particularly millennial and Gen Z customers, they're just not having it for the old brands and the old ways. Yeah. They just are not having it. They're not going to stand up or stand with or stand for a brand who isn't making an impact. You know, you think about the you know, Billie Eilish's stance that she took at the Met Gala this year, you know, wearing, not just wearing De La Renta, but demanding that that brand eliminate fur from its ecosystem.
Yeah.
And that's a very powerful, stance. So powerful. And that's not Billie's first time taking a stand. But we're seeing, you know, not just the Greta Thunbergs of the world, but so many other activists who are, you know, young people demanding that brands stand up. So I think that you're going to be hard pressed to find brands that don't come to market with sustainability as part of their core value proposition. I think another thing that I see that I hope that Planet Forward can really catalyze is a decade of total transparency around carbon. A decade where you as a consumer can understand very clearly exactly the greenhouse gas impact of everything that you purchase. And you can actually make purchasing decisions based on that. You know, the nutritional facts panel has become ubiquitous, right? You know the fat and the calories and the protein of every product that you buy. But you should also have the right to understand the carbon and the carbon equivalents of every product that you buy. So I see those as being two of the big things that this post-pandemic reality will bring us. And I'm so glad and happy that that is what is happening right now.
Amazing. So, you know, switching gears a little bit, while fundraising for Planet Forward, I know that you had focused intentionally on raising capital from women and people of color for your seed round. Why was this something that was important to you? And how did your approach to fundraising evolve being a second time founder?
So, yeah. So, and I'm like a third time founder now, or maybe a fourth. You know, yeah. I've been building businesses for a while now, and they're each different, you know, and some of them had hundreds of millions of dollars in venture funding, and others of them I totally bootstrapped, and others were a combination of bootstrapping and bank loans and credit cards. So definitely have seen the full spectrum. But I will tell you that in each case, what has made me feel the most powerful and energized in my role is to have really, really great people around me. Mm-hmm. And I know founders feel usually a lot of power around the way that they build their teams internally. You know, it's hiring's not easy, but ultimately you generally feel like you're in the driver's seat for who you bring into your company, right? Or who you exit. When it comes to investors, though, I know many founders often feel that they don't have the power, that you're sort of at the whim of the market and you're just working so hard to get your round done, you know?
Yeah.
A few of us are in the position often of having competitive rounds where we can choose who's at the table. And I'm seeing, you know, as the market activity, particularly for pre-seed and seed stage companies, becomes more frothy, I am seeing more and more founders have the opportunity to choose who they work with. But I think part of what it has to be is like a mindset shift. And the mindset shift for me was, okay, if I truly believe that I have control over who's on my cap table, because I believe that what I'm building is valuable and the market will view it as valuable, then who do I want on my cap table? You know, right? And I never really approached the exercise in that way. I definitely thought of what funds or how much or what valuation, but I began to think like, to the human, who do I want around me? And I realized that it was very important to have people around me who were diverse, and to have other Black people and other women and other people, you know, who identify as parents, you know, around me, because that was going to make me feel more seen, more safe, and more transparent.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so inspiring to hear, being in that position, you really thought intentionally about, you know, because your investors are effectively also your family. So it's, that's a great, both internally and externally, you're aligned, which I think is so important.
Absolutely. Your investors are really in it with you for the long haul, much like family is. And so the more that you can trust them, the more that you can create the conditions for you to be able to be transparent with them, the better the relationship's going to be. I think also, you know, there's this other element of, like, what's the change that I want to make happen in the world? And I get really excited about creating intergenerational wealth for women, non-binary people, and people of color. I love that meme that says, like, nothing bad ever happened when you gave a woman more money, you know? So it makes me just feel excited, right? Yeah. Like, we're going to work hard at our jobs every day, right? And I want to come to work and work hard for people and for ideas that really light me up. So it just felt to me more joyful, you know, in addition to being like strategically important to my success as a founder.
Yeah, no, that's phenomenal. And we see it in, within our own portfolio, you know, as we had our first unicorn recently and, you know, you think about what happens when—
Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And so, you know, you think about how a guy responds to that versus, you know, a woman, and it can be very different in terms of prioritization. So I'm 100% with you on that one. So, you know, in terms of our listeners, you know, we have quite a few female founders, and from your perspective, particularly as it relates to advice, any lessons that you learned that you think are applicable for female founders generally fundraising or those, you know, in the sustainability tech space?
Oh my goodness. I have so many lessons, but for female founders or founders who identify as female or non-binary, I think one of the things that's so important is to develop your back channels. I am on Slack and text and WhatsApp with dozens of other female founders. And the reason why that's so important is at any given moment, I can both give and receive advice that really matters. So, you know, having those like established channels of communication, like really pouring into your community is so important, because sometimes they're questions that are just hard to ask out in the open, you know, but you need to have those people who you can just send a quick note to and they'll respond back. You know, if a term sheet's taking much longer than you expected, you know, who's the person that you can text that's in that portfolio that can give you a read on whether or not that's normal or not, you know, when you're evaluating terms, when you're, you know, in my case, trying to figure out, you know, how to message that you're pregnant during the fundraising process, like, who are you going to call? And so like proactively developing those relationships with other women founders, I think is so helpful and important. And again, something that brings you more joy. Because sometimes being a founder, as you know, can feel very lonely. And the way to alleviate some of that loneliness is to build your community around you. Another thing that I'll say is fundraising. I was just talking to a good girlfriend about this, who's going to raise her Series A pretty soon. We were literally just on the phone about this last night. Fundraising is emotional. Just the bottom line. We talk about metrics and data rooms and funnels and pitch decks, and all of these things are so important. You've got to have your fundamentals. But there is a certain emotional element to putting yourself out there over and over again. And not just putting yourself out there about anything, putting yourself out there about this incredible company that you're building that's probably the most important thing to you in the world at many moments. So that vulnerability, that, you know, ability to rebound, that grit, has a huge emotional layer to it. And I think creating space for your emotions during the fundraising process is really important. For me, when I organize my calendar when I'm fundraising, I usually leave one day a week, often it's a Thursday or a Wednesday, to just reset. And it's not just about sending my follow-up emails and, you know, dialing back in on work-related projects. It's also about just breathing and decompressing a little bit. So I think don't underestimate the degree to which fundraising is a highly emotional process. Give yourself permission and space to feel those emotions and establish a network of trust and support around you so that when you get knocked down, you can get yourself back up again.
Oh, that's such great advice. Even for me as a, you know, as a fellow female founder fundraising, I've never thought about it that way. So I think that's so valuable. Going back to sustainability, there, as you mentioned, you know, there are so many companies now that are trying to find ways to develop best practices. And so I'm curious, you know, from your point of view, what is the best way to make a lasting impact in reducing a company's carbon footprint? And assume these are small kind of startups, as well as, you know, potentially larger companies that are, you know, kind of backtracking?
I'm so glad that you asked that question. The first and the most important thing is to make the commitment. You know, at the very highest levels of the organization, there needs to be a commitment to taking action. So the first thing is to make a commitment that you're going to do this work. The next most important thing is to create a baseline, to understand exactly where you are right now. Calculate your emissions at the company level and at the product level. And for anybody that's listening that needs help, I've got you. Just reach out to me and I will help. It's exactly what we're building at Planet Forward. And whether you work with us or a consultant or someone else, make sure that you know where you stand. You know, you can't improve what you don't first measure. So make a commitment and then create your baseline. And then the real meat of it all, where the magic really happens, is in the emissions reductions planning. This is where you work with Planet Forward or someone else to really understand the how. How do we actually move the needle? How do we go from where we are with our baseline all the way to zero, which is probably our commitment, or maybe 50% by 2025 and zero by 2030. So that emissions reductions really, really needs to be the foundation of a good climate strategy. And these are things like supply chain changes or headquarters changes. But for consumer brands, you know, 90%, roughly 90% of your overall impact is going to come from your product level emissions, or what we call scope 3. So it's not enough just to change light bulbs at your headquarters or to commit to flying on fewer airplanes, although those are great first steps. Frankly, those those actions are not enough to really create a solid emissions reductions plan. So you really need to do the analysis to understand how to reduce emissions. And again, I'm here to help. And then finally, one component of a strategy to get to net zero or to get to carbon neutral is to offset unavoidable emissions. And this is where you really want to do your research and be careful, because unfortunately, there's still a bit of confusion and a bit of fraud in the carbon offsetting space. So you want to make sure that you're working with a trusted partner to identify opportunities to offset your unavoidable emissions in projects that are permanent, where you can really show materiality. And there's some other factors that are really important in considering offsets. So that's the flow. Make the commitment, set your baseline, reduce your emissions, and then get to net zero when you've just got those last unavoidable emissions to offset.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. I think for many companies and individuals, you know, it's hard to know even where to start and, you know, what will make the most impact. And this is a very clear way of thinking about it. You know, we've seen that research has shown communities of color are disproportionately impacted by the climate crisis, as well as the related health threats around that. Why do you think it is important to have diverse founders leading the charge and the change towards action?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. The worst of what happens in the context of a rapidly warming planet, the worst of it happens first and happens disproportionately more to communities of color or frontline communities. And I will tell you also that a lot of what we need to understand and learn about how to be more sustainable can come from those same communities. Mm-hmm. I think about, you know, my grandmother who had a tinfoil ball. Mm-hmm. And who, if you asked her for a stick of gum, would cut that stick of gum into four pieces and give one to each cousin, and who would always practice waste not, want not. She lived almost a totally circular life. I don't remember plastic in her household, or if there was, it was reusable and there was very little of it. Mm-hmm. When we think about indigenous communities, you know, 6% of the population protecting 85% of our biodiversity. Indigenous communities have for millennia, have for thousands of years understood how to live at one with nature or as an extension of nature. Mm-hmm. And if I'm really radical, I will tell you that if indigenous people were in charge of managing our land and food system, we would not have 34% mm-hmm. of our greenhouse gas emissions coming from this sector. In fact, when Native Americans were in charge of agriculture and on this land, our food systems were carbon sinks. You know, there were actually net sequesters of carbon. So a lot of the wisdom that we need in order to combat the climate crisis and to actually re-engineer our food systems so that they work for us and not against us, that wisdom comes from communities of color and from Indigenous people. And this is why it's so important that we have people at the table when we're making decisions who are not just the same people who have been at the table.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. So, you know, I think the future of sustainability is really exciting. And I think you're uniquely positioned to kind of give us your perspective on where this is headed, particularly trends that you're excited about and areas of opportunity from an investing standpoint. Are there any specific companies or founders that you've met that you, you know, are excited to see what they build or what they're working on today?
I continue to be tremendously excited about Jasmine Crow's work at Gooder. Mm-hmm. I just think she's having such a huge impact in helping to reduce food waste. And you know that a huge percentage of all food-related emissions come from food waste. Nearly 50% of the food that we produce just gets wasted, which is a mind-boggling problem. And at the same time, we have folks who are living in hunger. And so Jasmine creating this infrastructure to connect repurposed food with the folks that need it, I think is just so incredible. So I continue to be really, really excited about Jasmine at Gooder. Another company that I follow and I think is so fantastic is Thrilling. This is Shilla Parker Kim's company. And something that I learned from Shilla is that if we never produced another garment, our children's children's children would have enough to wear. Wow. That is how much waste exists in the fashion industry. And so Shilla has created this distributed network of shops where you can buy recycled clothing and then all of the technical and logistical infrastructure to support clothes being reused and reborn and brought to life. And I just love the work that she's doing there. I could go on and on and I'm constantly impressed with the innovation that's happening in the space. Those are just two founders on my very long list.
Amazing. I love that. And it's, you know, very much an area we're excited about as well. So great to hear that, you know, you're seeing a lot of interesting businesses popping up too. In terms of this podcast, the 2% is really focused on highlighting stories of people who are working to improve the stats around investment in diverse founders. So I'm curious, you know, from your position, what do you think it will take to get parity in this field?
I love this question. And just last Friday, I was at an event that I co-founded with two dear friends, Dominique Fiennes and Megan Holston Alexander, also supported by our friend Judine Smalls. And the event is called When Founder Met Funder. And it's our third year producing this event. Yeah. And it's all about connecting women and non-binary founders, Black women and non-binary founders at the pre-seed and seed stage with investors. Because what we kept hearing anew over and over again was, you know, I think that I have a venture backable business, but I don't even know where to begin in terms of connecting with investors.
Sure.
And we often heard, that for many women, their first time connecting with an investor was during a pitch. And that just feels like, the conditions for a disaster. If your first time meeting an investor is while you're pitching them, the likelihood that you're really going to connect is just very, very low.
Very low. Well,
so part of what needs to happen is we need to demystify venture for pre-seed and seed stage founders. That's one thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's really important is I think funds really need to lean in at the Series A. You know, going from seed to Series A is where we see often a huge drop off in funding.
Yeah.
But I imagine that there are many more companies that are fundable than actually get funding. And so what I'd love to see is more investors taking bets at the Series A and not holding so fast to these pattern matches or these metrics and really trying to deeply get in and understand companies. And that may mean that they do a bit more outreach at the seed stage so that they build a bridge to the A. But I'd love to see a little bit more risk-taking on the part of funds at the Series A. There's so many other things that we need to do, but I think that, you know, investors have a tremendous amount of power.
Yeah.
And each investment decision that a fund makes sends a big signal to the ecosystem about what's possible and what they're about. And then we as founders, we need to make sure that we're successful. <That's>, you know, making sure that Planet Forward has the impact that it needs to in the world, making sure that I can serve as an example and a model for what's possible when you back Black women. That is one of the best things that I can do for the ecosystem.
That's great insight and feedback. So we're now going to move into our lightning round series of questions in rapid fire, and feel free to answer with whatever comes to mind first. Let's start with, when did you first discover your entrepreneurial spirit?
I have always been a hustler. I used to collect my Halloween candy and then resell it to my neighbors. I was totally uninterested in eating the candy and very interested in amassing it. I would sort it into categories, trade for it across categories that I knew would be popular, and then resell it. And I made quite a bit of money for a little kid selling the Halloween candy.
How would you describe your perfect day?
You know what's so funny is I have a little journal where I write down all my perfect days. And I have many perfect days. It's actually quite often that I have a perfect day. But it usually begins with waking up early and sitting in my meditation and then doing some movement. And it usually ends with being surrounded by my family, especially my partner, Tremaine, and our little three-year-old, and sharing food together.
What does success look like to you?
Tackling climate change and raising happy, healthy boys.
What is your guilty pleasure? How do you relax?
Oh, you know, something I'm trying to do is separate the notion of guilt from pleasure. Mm-hmm. That's like my meditation right now. I feel like pleasure is our birthright. But something that I find deliciously subversive in a way is to watch very, very, very stupid TV, to put down my climate books and put down my laptop and watch something like as silly as 90 Day Fiance, you know, on speakerphone with my big sister.
Anything you want to plug or announce here?
So excited that Planet Forward has built a tool that makes it easy for brands to understand your and reduce your carbon footprint. And I'd love for brands to reach out to me so that I can help.
And lastly, where can our listeners find you online?
Yep, I'm on Instagram, Julia E. Collins, if you want to see some adorable baby photos and my musings about how you can tackle climate change at home. I'd love for you to follow me. And if you're interested in plugging into the Planet Forward community, please visit us at planetfwd.com.
Well, thank you so much for having us, Julia. This was fantastic and so educational. Really appreciate it, and hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. This was really fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to the 2% for today's episode featuring Julia Collins. Julia's career-long dedication to building a more sustainable world through the power of food is incredibly inspiring, and I hope you learned as much from today's conversation as I did. Stay in touch with us on Instagram at Female Founders Fund and on Twitter at FCubeVC. And for those of you building the next billion-dollar businesses, we'd love to hear from you. Send all pitch decks to pitches@femalefoundersfund.com and we'll be in touch. And finally, if you're interested in working at one of our 45-plus female-founded startups, explore our job opportunities at jobs.femalefoundersfund.com. Make sure to subscribe to the 2% on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening. And stay tuned for our next episode with powerful women founding and funding the future. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes or simply tell a friend about the show. That would help us out too. Until next time, I'm Anu Dugal, and this has been the 2%.